This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 543, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Why can't a man stand alone? Must he be burdened by all that is taught to consider his own? His skin and his station, his kin and his crown.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 543. I am Josh Flanagan. And here in the script, I wrote crickets between some asterisks. And that is to indicate that I am by my lonesome. You may remember that I did this a little over a year ago, May of 2015. And it came up, and I thought, sure, what the heck, I'll do that again. Since it went well last time, then why not really go for it and see if there's a way that it could go worse? And I think that together we can make that happen. So we, or in this instance, I am iFanboy. Normally I am here with my two partners and brothers, Ron Richards and Connor Kilpatrick, who are both, one is on vacation, like a real, like, going somewhere vacation, and nuts to him, by the way. And then the other one is on a work trip, and then after that, he will be going on a long vacation. And in case you are curious, I have no vacation plans in the near future. And that's on me. I have vacation days. It's fine. But I'm a bad planner, is what I'm getting at. We are iFanboy, though, if we were all here, and we all like comics if we were all here, and so I will claim to also like them still as well. Every week we read a stack of comics, and one of us will pick their favorite book, and we're going to call that the pick of the week, and we're going to talk about, I'm saying we, because that's within the script, and I'll talk about that book and some other books and some stuff, and then I've got some listener mail, and it's a gay old time. Not in that sense, although also in that sense, too. Like the Flintstone sense. Maybe there was some subtext there. I don't know. I can't be sure. Here's your spoiler warning. This could suck. There's your spoiler warning. It's a review show also, so I'm going to talk about what's happening in the comic books. But also it might suck, which I believe would spoil things. But you know how spoilers work. This week, well, obviously I have the pick. The pick of the week is Sheriff of Babylon number 8. I was going to say numero, and then I couldn't remember Spanish for 8, which would be ocho, I believe. You may want to check my pronunciation on that. There's a blurb on the cover of this issue that says, Tom King and Mitch Garrett are the hottest duo in comics. I want to take a brief aside here and say that back in college, we used to play Star Wars Trivial Pursuit, and every time a question came up and it would say, what duo? The answer was always R2-D2 and C-3PO. So if you're ever playing that game, I guess that's a hot tip for you. Anyway, says the Court of Nerds, which might be a worse name than iFanboy, but barely, if that's the case. Anyway, Tom King and Mitch Garrett are the hottest duo in comics. If you're not reading this book, we need to talk. That's their quote on the front. And I think, I was thinking about it, really just started now, So I didn't think about it for a really long time, but just now, you're going to see there are asides because I have to entertain myself, and I don't have Ron's laugh to be my guidepost, so I apologize for that. Anyway, and I think that there is credence to that. You're watching Tom and Mitch, who I spoke to on a podcast not too long ago, and you should go listen to that if you hadn't. But you're watching two guys sort of crest a hill together, as it were. And like they've really, you know, like Mitch did really good work with Nathan Edmondson, I think, and he did a few things in there. But if you hear them hang out together, you watch the two of them on social media, listen to that interview we did, like they've got a thing. They've got a rapport. They've got a commonality. And it feels like going back through my history of talking about comics, when a team clicks, when people really love working with each other, look at Mark Waid and Chris Somni, or look at recently, you know, Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, or Rick Remender and 100 incredibly talented artists who just need to stop. I'm looking at you, Mateo Scalera. You know, when they work together, they create a special thing. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't always know exactly what's going on in Sheriff of Baghdad. And a lot of times that's not a strength, but in this one, it absolutely is a strength. They've got a thing going on. They're making something that feels authentic and unique and special. And in this issue, we basically are getting some backstory, but literally there are pages of these pages of grids, these nine panel, there's 4 pages in a row of a woman on a cell phone. It's a head and shoulders shot. And another version of Josh Flanagan in the past would have said, "What the fuck are you doing? This is, you don't do that. It's comic books. You take advantage of it." But man, they make it work. They make it work with killer dialogue that is laden with subtext. One of the reasons that it's hard to follow this book a little bit is that nobody's actually speaking the whole truth. Everybody's speaking out of the side of their mouth, or everybody has an agenda, and it's not entirely clear what that agenda is, and it's mysterious and scary. And I'm guessing that if you are a CIA agent on the ground in Iraq, that's a little bit what it feels like. That's a lot what it feels like. And I think that Tom King, and I might be projecting, I think that he's really captured that. You know, Mitch's these characters are acting all over the place. I mean, it's eyes and expressions and posture, and you know, he's just this side of too much photorealism, but he's towing that line and it's totally working. So we sort of see the backstory that's going on with this. I don't know anyone's name in this story, but the Iraqi man who's along with the American guy who's investigating this murder, you know, we find his backstory, and it's kind of crushing. And as we hear it and see it, we see him just sort of by himself. We see him with his family, and then we see him by himself, and it's crushing. It really is. And he goes to the beach by himself, and he just kind of floats there as we learn about him. And then we cut to where he is now and what's going on and why he's helping. And then there's it's just a really layered book. And it's quiet, and everything else has so much bombast that I've been reading lately, because, you know, it has to, that's the name of the game. And it the whole thing seems brave and it seems bold to me. And so when I tell you I don't know exactly what's going on, like I totally have a sense of where we're going and what's happening. I'm not lost, but I'm really enjoying sort of the ambiguity of so much of it. And it's just being done with such craft. You're just watching these guys just click into these roles as comic book storytellers, and it's lovely. And I think I've known Mitch as an artist for a long time, and I have liked his work a lot. I wouldn't say that his is a style that is my favorite sort of kind of style, but watching him fit into these clothes and this role, I'm really impressed. It's definitely turn it into something. And I thought as I was reading this, I was like, oh, they should probably win an Eisner. And I had that thought. And every once in a while, that will creep in, you know, and that means, oh, we're looking at something something great. And I hope other people are enjoying it too. I don't know that it's enjoyable, really, in that sense. Like when Fun Home was like the big graphic novel that everyone was talking about. Like, it was good, but it wasn't fun. So that title was a lie. It was a huge lie. But this is a little like that. But it also, you know, I don't particularly like reading stories about the current Iraq war. It's 15 years old now. But this feels relevant. This feels like a thing. Actually, the other thing is that this feels literally as alien as a Superman story. And just that, like, this world that is going on here is so far removed from the one that I live in. It's actually so far removed from most of the stuff that you see, you know, on Facebook about people complaining about politicians or news, or not even complaining, but righteous indignation, whichever you have. It's almost, even though it's such a bummer, it is a respite from that thing, which is interesting too. And again, I know because Tom was there that there's authenticity to it. It may only be authenticity. I've used that word three times now. It may only be authentic four. It may only be authenticity five, from his point of view, which isn't necessarily to, you know, say like, oh, this is completely factual or whatever. But, you know, it's honest. I feel like he's definitely trying to be honest to make that a thing. So there it is. There's your pick of the week, Sheriff Babylon number 8. I can't remember if I've made this pick the week before. I don't think so. But it's just really impressive, and it's good. Almost pick of the week this week was, and this is not, it was almost Superman number 2. Yeah, Superman number 2. I thought, is this going to be pick of the week? And it turns out it was not going to be pick of the week, but that's fine. It's by Pete Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. And what there was in, I've been talking about this on the other shows, like, it's a really good Superman story, like this has been going on. And by having the Superman of the other Earth come to this Earth and have a kid, it works. And it shouldn't, if you pitch me this, I think I'd be like, no, don't do that. But it lends it the whole thing of freshness. Gleason is doing this. It's great style. There's a couple of panels here that are almost reminiscent of sort of the Ed McGuinness type of Superman. I really like how he's drawing Superman. If I don't have to get to have the beard, I have that. The thing that got me is there's two great scenes in this. Superman flies his son, John, named after Jonathan Kent, I guess, up to the Arctic to help a submarine, and a big monster pops through the ice, and he enlists his son to help him, and it's sort of like a learning experience. It's great parent writing. I wouldn't be surprised if either of these guys are dads, because it feels, I almost said the A word. I'm not going to, it felt honest in that way. The son sort of confesses that he burned their cat to death, you know, and that's going to happen if you have laser eyes and you have the puberty, you put those together. I kind of burned up some cats in my day, I think. A lot of charred feline remains, from ages 11 to 14, let's say. I didn't really do that. I want to make that clear, officers. There was a little bit, I guess what got me was that there was a little bit in here that was like from Preacher, you know, like, you got to be one of the good guys, son. My favorite line in the history of comic books, I think, at this point. But he basically says something like that. He's like, it's not your powers. It's not that. It says it's not about your powers or strength or heat vision. It's about character. It means doing the right thing when no one else will, even when you're scared, even when you think no one is looking. And like, when, as soon as he says that, the kid confesses. And I ate that up from both sides, both from the father's side and the son's side. Even the layouts, this is some great work from Gleason. It's just wonderful layouts and stuff. And then there's another great scene where the girl who saw him burn the cat alive, and this is a metaphor for those of you not paying attention, it tells him it's cool, and she touches his hand, and he just he falls off a tree and hurts himself, which is weird. And then there's something going on at the end with Eradicator, and I have no idea what that means, because I didn't read Superman in the 90s, but I know Eradicator is a thing from back then. And he has glasses, like old mountain bikers used to wear, and current baseball players who are dorkier than old mountain bikers. Oh, I'm kidding. I don't mind your sport, baseballers. It's batsmen. So that's Superman number 2. I really liked it a lot. I've liked every version of this that has come out. I've liked him in Justice League and in Action Comics and in Superman. And isn't that refreshing? It's great to have fun reading Superman books. And it's not even they were bad before. Like, there were some good Superman books, but I'm really digging this. Maybe I've actually liked Superman for a long time and I just keep forgetting. So next up, Aquatic Man number 2. or Arthur of the Deep, is called neither of those things. Aquaman number two. This is left over. You may remember Artie C, as we call him, was having a big party for Earth people to get to see that Atlantean people who actually hate them ain't such bad soggy folks. They're soggy folks, but they ain't so bad. But it gets all screwed up when a character named Black Manta, who's black, he's a black man, shows up to avenge his father's death. Because Arthur Curry killed his father. We see a flashback. He snaps his neck. He's justifiably mad. And there's this sort of interesting conversation like, this can't keep going on. Why are we going to do this? There's no point. I can't change it. You know, it made me who I am. And basically he has the chance to kill Black Manta. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that. He decided not to kill him. And then he turns the spear around on himself and he hands it to Black Manta. He's like, you know what? Then fine. If you're going to do this, just kill me. Do it. And also, statistically speaking, by the way, if you say that to somebody, like with a gun or whatever, and you're like, fine, do it. You're not man enough. They will shoot you. I believe I've read articles on that. So this was a bad move on Aquaman's part. But Manta basically was like, you're right. And he says, damn you. And he throws the spear. And then apparently just turns himself into authorities. No word on what happened to the giant helmet. Which is an important thing. I really like that scene. I thought it was pretty nice. And then at the end, and this happens at a lot of in the end of a lot of comic books that I'm enjoying right up until page 19, some villain shows up and I don't ever know who it is. And she busts Black Manta out. She's got red balls, red glowy balls. That's not right. She's got red. I don't know. She's a black leathery suit. And then I guess like large red buttons. And then, is she like Deadshot's? Is that it? See, the thing that works about this show when it's not just me is that the other guys know things. And I don't even bother learning them. Because I know it can be a bit. I can say, hey guys, what is that? I'm a big stupid over here. And then they tell me and say, you're a big stupid. That's not happening now. I don't know who that is. What do you know who it is? But I never know who it is. And the point is, those reveals at the end of books kind of always fall a little flat with me. And then if I do know who it is, I'm like, I've seen this before. Hey, you know another thing that happens when there's nobody else here? I can't pause to take a drink of water because when I do, it sounds like this. And that's dead air. I know that because I have a broadcasting degree. What's odd is that I actually didn't take a drink of water during that time, so I just wasted that dead air. Moving on, I want to talk about unfollow number 9, which is the button you are all hovering over on Twitter. Because of this thing in your ear. We have liked this book all along. All of us, I believe. Rob Williams and Mike Dowling. I'm bringing this up, I guess, because we learned some things in this. And plot is moving forward, and it was enjoyable. There are the goofy Russian gangsters. And now I don't know if that's just a cliche or if that's a real thing. I guess they're probably not goofy. Or maybe I just read them that way because of all the movies and stuff. Either way, I wrote some of those once, and now I have to change them because it is totally cliche. I don't know. We get like these little hints of all the characters in this one, and at least one more of the 140 gets killed. Those of you at home may remember that a tech bajillionaire is dying, and he says, I'm dying. You 140 get to split my... You get to split my fortune, but for every one of you that dies, everybody splits their share. So then all of a sudden there's a reason to have them killed. So we're down to 133. That's 7 who are killed. And then we also find out that Crazy Mask Guy is also one. Maybe we did know this. I'm not sure. He's one of the 140. So he has motive to kill folk because it will make him more rich. And then finally, there's a big reveal at the end because it turns out the guy did not die. The Bill Gatesy. Guy who looks like Grant Morrison. That's what the script said, I think. It said Bill Gatesy guy who looks like Grant Morrison. So there's twists and turns. It's fun. It's riveting. It's exciting. Let's talk about Empress Number 4 and the Adventures of Space George Lucas as written by Mark Miller and Stuart Eminem. I guess if I was gonna say anything about Stuart Eminem, I would say what John Travolta said in Pulp Fiction after he tried the milkshake. Because, damn good. I don't think that's the line. That's not the point. You get what I'm saying. If you haven't seen the movie, you wouldn't know. But if you had seen the movie, it makes sense to you either way. So it's a win-win for me. Space George Lucas, you know, he's committed to saving these kids. I mean, there's two things going on that make it great. It's super fast-paced, big epic space opera action. And there are problems and solutions, and they're all coming fast and heavy. I like this a lot better than Chrononauts, which was fun. But I feel like this is even more clever, and I like the characters better. And also, whilst, you know, Sean Murphy, a fine artist, I don't know why I'm comparing these two books. They were just both written by Mark Miller. I don't need to make one better than the other, but I just did. But you got Stuart Immonen on this, and as I've said before, and we'll say again, you know, until somebody amazing comes along, there's literally nobody better at comic book storytelling in this sort of action form, or actually even so other forms, because he does other stuff. I can't remember the name of it. Again, I could look this up if there was somebody else here, but there was a small book that he and his wife did, Red King to something or other. It's great. I have it upstairs. It's a beautiful hardcover. And that's a completely different art style. It's not action-y or anything, and it's gorgeous and beautifully told as well. Guy has talent. And anytime I can get an issue with him, have you noticed that Mark Miller has all of the masters of modern comic book storytelling in his little, you know, cadre? Someone needs to look into that. I think I actually asked him about that once. I don't remember his answer, but you know what the secret to that is? And I hope this isn't giving anything away. It's money. He's got a lot of money and he can pay them to work on books and it's worth it for them because they get back end. And when that stuff get made into movies, anyway, he knows how to pick them and that's super smart. I want to touch on Invincible Iron Man number 11. I know that the big story came out this week that Iron Man is now a black lady, which, by the way, is not like a surprise. I don't know who didn't see that coming in the last like three issues, but they put a story out where they interviewed Bendis in Time magazine, and people are mad because people are mad when they change, and other people are mad at people who are mad because why can't things change, and is mad and whatever. You know, this issue's been pretty good. I liked it. I liked, like, Tony Stark goes on this weird quest where he's undercover dressed, and I'm not sure about, I believe he's dressed actually as James Franco. Like, I know that sometimes artists make people look like stuff, but I believe he actually is dressed as James Franco. And there's a double switcheroony where Rhodey's trying to find him, and he meets up with Tony, but it's not really Rhodey. It's Ms. Marvel. And it's good. It's fun. And about that lady who's going to be Iron Man, fine. Whatever, if you don't like it, don't read the book anymore. Tony Stark isn't going to disappear. He's like the most valuable character they have. I'm tired of it all. You know, in, was it the 70s or the 80s? At some point, James Rhodes, it's 30 years ago at least, was Iron Man. And so back then, they made a black man Iron Man. And now they're going to make a black woman Iron Man for some indeterminate period of time. And the Earth will still revolve on its axis. So, like it or not, whatever you want to do about that, everything's going to be just fine. And I recognize that, do you think maybe we've had too much Tony Stark now for the last 8 years? Not too much, but there's been a lot of Tony Stark. Maybe sunset him for a bit. Can you bring something back after a sunset? That's a tech term that I learned working in the tech industry. You sunset something. It may be used in other places. I know its normal usage is still something that's thrown around, I believe, when the sun goes down, which I have a very specific son, and he would tell me the sun does not go down. The earth moves around it. And I just want you to know that pedantic nature is hereditary. So that's nice. So that was Invincible Iron Man number 11. I'm going to move on now to this brief ad spot. But before I do that, I'm going to take a drink of water, but you won't hear it. Oh, that was delicious. It turns out that what I can do is pause the recording. Yeah. Remember I told you about that degree in broadcasting? So that's money well spent. It's paid off now, so it's totally fine. If you like iFanboy, what we do, the work we produce, the measures we're willing to go through to make sure that you get a show every single week for well over a decade now, and this kind of sparkling commentary, let's be honest, you can help support the show at ifanboy.com/support. You will find an Amazon link, which you can then use when you buy all that stuff that, oh God, don't you love getting stuff? Don't you love a brown box waiting there with something on it that you either could or couldn't afford, but it doesn't matter because it's in your hand and you can worry about all that stuff later? I'm just saying, when you do that, when you can't control your impulse any longer, I can go about a week without getting a package before I start to get itchy, by the way. It's like I get drugs because it's the same thing. There is a box there and there's something in that box that I did not have before. And in 2 years, that thing in there is probably going to be just like every other piece of junk I do not want in my house anymore. But when that box shows up, man, oh, that's the stuff. And then sometimes you try to just take that box downstairs because maybe nobody knew it was coming and you didn't ask if you could spend that money. Listen, none of that is my concern. My concern is that you use our link to do it so we get a little piece of that. So whatever your addictive or compulsive buying habits are, that I can take a small advantage of it. And that's what I want to do. You can also just send us money. We call it a membership or a donation, but it's you giving me money because you like this. Think of it as the cup at the Starbucks, and I'm the best damn comic book barista you've ever had. You go to ifanboy.com/support and you'll find a way to do that. We have plans set up there for $3 a month or $30 a year or just any old damn amount you want. You know, do it if you can or if you want to. I try to support the shows I like. I send the money to the NPR regularly. You know, that kind of thing. Because if it's important to you, then you should make it gooder for us. I also tell you, not only am I doing this like late at night, I mean not alone, but it's late, like for me, on a school night. I don't go to school, and school's not technically in, but I have to work tomorrow as well. Actually, I have to bring my dog to the vet in the morning, and then I got a haircut. It's a whole thing. Basically, I'm getting a haircut at the same time we normally do the show, so win-win, except I'm going to be up late, so grouchy with little bags under the eyes. Civil War II, Kingpin number one. That's a lot of words and numbers in one title, but we're all used to that at this point. This is written, two-parter, sort of two-parter in one issue, both parts written by Matt Rosenberg. You may remember Matt Rosenberg from the pick of the week last week, and it's about the Kingpin coming back to town. Art is by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz and Matt Lopez on the first story, which is titled Shouldn't Have Come Back. That's referring to the Kingpin. And the second story is by Dalibor, that sounds like one of those foreign Simpsons names that's not real, but maybe that's totally normal in some other place. Dalibor. It's nice. Rolls off the tongue. Dalibor Talagic. Ooh, I like that. Dalibor Talagic. Inker Jose Marzan Jr. And colorist by Miroslav Mrv. There's no vowel in the middle of that. That was fun for me. See why the other guys are here? It's to stop all of this. I've just got to fill time. I really liked both of these artists, is what I was going to get at. Specifically, Dalibor. Old Dal. Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, specifically. But Dalibor did a good job. It's fine. Just kind of wacky stuff in his first art book. Sort of big cartoon eyes on the Kingpin, which is fun. You know, he basically comes back to New York and he's not as powerful anymore. At one point he's in a tracksuit, which is rad. And Hawkeye comes in and gets mad at him. It's fun. It felt a little bit off brand as far as the Kingpin that I know, but I still had fun with it. And I was like, well, whatever. They keep rebooting everything and changing the characters. So this is fine. So basically the first story is sort of with a Kingpin and his point of view. And then the second story is one of the henchmen who is an inhuman, who should be a mutant. I'm really totally sick of that. You know, this Iron Man thing, I'm not upset about that. But this inhuman mutant thing is stupid. I get it. And it totally makes sense. And it's a choice they probably had to make. But I'm like, oh, just they're mutants. Who are you kidding? Kids in the future won't care about that. Captain America Civil War number 11. I'm bringing it up for two reasons. One, I got a few pages into it and I thought, I don't care. And I was like, I'm done. I don't. And it's not the writing. It's not the whatever. It's just the Civil War thing. I'm not invested in this Civil War 2 at all. I don't like it. It's not doing a thing for me. And so like this part of it, I kind of don't care about. Although there was an I Got This. in Captain America Sam Wilson number 11 very early on. And the character was kind of being goofy, so it's kind of had a reason to be there. But, you know, I've got to have a zero tolerance policy on I got this, we got this. There's no reason to. Walking Dead number 156. Walking Dead will survive the nuclear holocaust. Walking Dead will survive the oceans drying up or flooding us, whichever way that goes. Walking Dead will always exist. There will always be Walking Dead. When Robert Kirkman eventually goes crazy and Walking Dead becomes his second manifesto, Walking Dead will persevere. Walking Dead is what I'm getting at. Because at this point, Mike, Robert Kirkman's actually going to get so successful that he is going to go crazy. Because that's what happens to super successful people. And then he's going to do his, whatever his like episode one version of Walking Dead is. And it's all going to be terrible and we're going to love him anyway. It isn't going to matter. The point is, Robert Kirkman is omnipresent. Why am I talking about Walking Dead 156 again? Because there's a... So this is easier to do without spoiling it when I have people here. But basically there was... We're spending a lot of time with Negan. And what I've learned about Negan is... that just now I learned that it rhymes with Megan. Which is funny because that's a girl's name. And he's super macho. Negan... like he just he just loves to write Negan. Loves it. It must be so much fun. Because it pours out of him like water. Which is why like... The letter must get in and just go, oh, Robert, it's Russ again. Does he have to say so many things? Is this absolutely necessary? But this is a Negan issue, and he's hanging out with the Whisperers. And there's, wow, okay. So what that was, I have a desk lamp, and I'm holding a whammy bar from my Squire Jazzmaster, and I hit the bell-shaped part of the sort of little Pixar Junior lamp that I have here. And it did that. I didn't know the proximity, but it's all live and on tape now. There's a big twist that happens in this that I did not see coming, and it was really fun and brutal and Walking Dead-y. And I don't watch the show, so I just read the comic book, so that's fun for me too. So it's good. Are you still reading this? Might as well, because eventually it will outlive all other comic books, and you don't want to have to go back and get the trades at that point. Batman number 2. From a guy that you might have heard of named Tom King. See what I did there? He had the pick of the week on his other book. And David Finch. And I wanted to talk about this because I was going to say mean, but I'll just say it. Like, I don't like David Finch's work. I never have. But you got Jordi Belair coloring this. And it's pretty good. It's, boy, when he has like a... Like, now I'm wondering, now I'm just wondering, maybe I just don't like the colorists. That's what it was. That's what I didn't like about stuff. I noticed there's a couple of really nice things in here. One, there's some good storytelling, except there's a left-hand panel stacking, but it actually didn't lose me. I didn't notice it until just now, so I'm going to let him get away with it. There's this one bit where... Jim Gordon is talking to Batman and Gotham, Lady Gotham, what's her name? Gotham and Gotham Girl. Lady Gotham, that's it. And they're on the rooftop, and Batman does his disappearing act, and like the gag is, they're like, how did he do that? I can see everything, I'm super powerful. What's up? And you know. And I knew the line was going to be Jim Gordon saying, oh, yeah, he does that. Well, Gotham, it's the name of the character, so that's why it's awkward to say. Gotham says, you know, we're here to save this city. And Gordon gives this sort of droll look, and he's like, well, thank the Lord, I don't know how we got along without you. And man, the face, the eyebrow cock, and the sort of droll eye look, Finch nailed the hell out of that. Some high-quality, top-notch acting there. And I got to say, I'm pretty impressed by it. I like this storyline. I like the thing that's going on here. I had this complaint for like a half a second that Bruce Wayne looked too young, and then I remember that he got a whole new, like, young clone body. Also, I thought this was going to be a Solomon Grundy story, and it wasn't, so I was really glad about that, because 4 pages of Solomon Grundy is enough pages of Solomon Grundy. Midnight of the Soul, number 2, by Howard Chaykin. It's still fucked up. It's really fucked up, and I don't know if it's okay. That's my whole review, but I read it. It's fucked up, though. And I really want that to make the cover. And I feel like that's the thing that could happen, because it's fucked up, is my point. Poe Dameron, number 5. That's right. We've entered Star Wars Corner. And for those of you who have followed this show in the past, you will know that, God, there was a lot of comic books this week. And I didn't even talk about all of them, because it would have taken too long of just me talking. But Poe Dameron, number 5, came out. And I thought this was pretty good. Pretty good. That was the world's worst Larry David. It's because I didn't commit to it, and because I'm not good at it. It's those two things. But it starts off with the Black Squadron? They're having a party because they just beat the New Order people. But there's a little bit of nice sort of interpersonal stuff. We sort of get just a little bit of each of the characters in there. And then after that, there's this great setup where Poe Dog, that's what I call him, he's a buddy of mine, and his jacket, they go to the prison planet, this prison planet that exists in a high gravity area, and there's no guards or anything like that, and they gotta go down there and they gotta see that hut from the other Star Wars movie. Not movie, the comic books, the hut from Jason Aaron's series, who had Luke captured, the one who has the robot legs, Gracchus, which is a Roman senator's name. And there's some really nice, some really good imaginative world building stuff here, and I really liked it a lot. It was super impressive. I like Phil Noto a lot. Phil Noto and Mitch Gerrards are becoming similar to one another in style. It's not necessarily a bad thing, just a thing I've noticed. Maybe it's the same guy. They don't look anything alike, and they don't sound anything alike, but their drawings look somewhat similar, so there could be something going on there. I don't know. I don't have confirmation on that. But I like this little Poe Dameron series. It's fun. It's fun. We're hanging out with him. And those are some good creators on that. So, I have finished. That's the books of the week. I hope that was good for you. Who's shut off by now? You wouldn't be able to answer. You're gone, though. You'll know. First audience question comes in from Matt. Matt says, first, thank you for turning me onto Criminal. I love small stories with very real emotional realities, and the 10th anniversary special was great. This email's a little old. My question is kind of related. As someone who came to comics via the altiest of alt comics, many content creators' emphasis on the mainstream Big Two comic culture is sometimes frustrating. I've been thinking about this since the publication Strangers in Paradise, at least. That's well over it. That's almost two decades, at least. That's good. At least, do you see a schism between comic culture and superhero culture? Are they separate, or is one a sub-variety? Is one growing or shrinking? Is it positive or negative? People constantly say that comics are more popular than ever, but I feel like it's actually only superheroes and the rare Walking Dead, that will outlive us all, that have seen this boost. Additionally, there is now enough non-comic media for these superhero fans to explore what it stands to reason that one can only be Batman fan while... I'm sorry. He's just saying you can just be a Batman fan, even if you've never read a comic. And don't mistake my question for an attempt to create some kind of line between real fans and not real fans or whatever. I don't believe in that mess. And I agree with you, Matt, about that part and mostly about the rest of it, too. It really is the age of the superhero. It's brought on by, you know, some of the most successful films of all time that are about superheroes. And I think that we've definitely seen some trickle-down effect into the comics, which is something that didn't used to happen so much. It would create blips, but... You know, the comics are benefiting from that, but they're also following it. So you are seeing the comics adapt themselves for those versions of the characters, either in TV or film. But yeah, I mean, but it's always been about superheroes. You know, I feel like comics as comics, it feels like it's sort of a flat line. You know, we're the same people, we're reading them. Some people go away. Superheroes are really popular right now, everywhere. Kids with whoever, in many forms. I feel like I'm starting to burn out on that part a little bit. And it's funny because I remember people used to, 10, 15 years ago, I would hear people say, yeah, I've had enough of superheroes. And I thought, why? Those are, you know, those are the best people are still doing. And that is totally the case. Like the best people at comics are the ones who get hired to make superhero comics. So, you know, whatever that other book is, like, they're hiring great talent because they can make a living. They can get paid to do superhero comics. And, you know, whereas Terry Moore is like, I'm not doing a long form thing like that again. He said that because he can't make a living from those issues. He used to be able to, but he can't now because it's changed. It's like music where, you know, you can't make a living from streaming sales because they don't sell albums. So you gotta, you know, you gotta do something else. And I think it's that same way. It's sad. The comics will never go away though. You know, they're always going to be there. It's just hard to get a mass audience with anything. And it's harder to make a living doing niche content. But it is truly the era of the superhero. Definitely. And I think that's definitely the case. Lucas, L-U-K-A-S, from Austria, said, this morning, you thought I was going to do an accent, didn't you? I thought about it, and then I thought, that's going to go poorly. And I should not do that. See, this morning, I told you I wasn't going to. This morning, I glanced at the stack of trades on my nightstand, which had accumulated over the last couple of days, when I realized, I'm becoming Josh! Then it says, see attachment, and there was a picture of his trades. Which was the Airboy trade, and I think an elongated man thing, and then something else. It was like stuff that I would read. Although I wouldn't read that elongated man book properly. Not because I don't want to, I just wouldn't have time for it. So now I ask you, how should I deal with... I'm trying really hard not to talk like Peter Sellers. How should I deal with it? What are the challenges and benefits of being Josh Flanagan? He spelled my name right. Comics reading... wise, not just, you know, just not just in general, because that's a longer podcast. Do you believe there is a cure? And finally, how does any one of you happen to any one of you happen to have the number of Tom Caters? This is from the beautiful Austria. Okay, I do have Tom Caters' number, although it's an old number. I haven't called. It seems to check out, sir. I haven't called him in a while. I'm not going to give it to you because he doesn't know you, and that's creepy. You know what? I think it is challenging being Josh Flanagan. I'm not even going to make jokes about the... Because, you know, I'm a dad. I'm working. You got a house here. I'm down here in the basement right now. The mouse guy was here. Anyway, the dead mouse smell went away at least, so I got that. See, that sounds challenging already. Just in terms of comics, I'm just going to do this to talk about myself, aren't I? I can do this when nobody else is around, because you can't accuse me. I got to fill time. I got air to fill. Yeah, I find comics to be somewhat challenging right now. I appreciate the art form, and I understand it better than I ever have, and it's the best, because when you see something great, I can spot it a mile away, like George Costanza spotting dimes, and I feel like I used that recently on a different show, because it's a stupid reference to all of my, everything is at least 20 years old that I reference now, like a dad. Oh my god, I'm such a dad. I love the form and the craft, and unfortunately or fortunately, like, I've met most of the people and had at least, you know, meaningful interaction with people who make comics. So that either can or can't. It usually only positively affects the work, because you kind of, not only are you like, that's really good, but then you also, there's like a swell of pride, like, good for that guy, you know, because when you know somebody, you're happy to see them succeed. And so I get to see these guys, you know, like, and girls, but mostly, let's be honest, mostly guys, you know, succeed at doing it. I'm always really happy about that. So, you know, I can recognize great art. I am less invested in the superhero narrative than ever before. Partially that's because a lot of the characters that I had cared about are different now, which is fine. You know, whatever, times move on. And I can even grouse about it, but I don't even think that's valid. Then the other thing is just, I want things to be great, and when they're not great, I don't have time for them. You know, bad is fine. Like, oh, this is bad, I don't want to read it. Middling is the worst. Like, so when something is just mediocre, it is the worst. And so you've got to, like, find stuff that gets you excited, because if not, it's just a chore and you hate it. Is that too honest? I really, like, I want to love the comics, and I love a day where I'm, like, I must have had at least 20 books this week, and, like, some of them, like I said, I started to read Sam Wilson Captain America, or Captain America Sam Wilson, and I got, like, six pages in, and I thought, I don't care, and I just stopped, and I didn't want to read it. But, you know, there's other things where I sort of got to the end. I was like, wow, that was pretty great. Pick of the week. It's fun. The show's good because what happens is you have to find a thing to be happy about. And you usually can. I can't ever think of a time that, like, I made a pick of the week where I was like, you know, nah, it wasn't really that good. Like, I made myself like it if I had to. But, you know, that ends up turning into genuine admiration. So I guess, like, I really love the stuff I love. And I'm impatient about the stuff that I don't. Because all that time's precious. All the time reading or talking about it or whatever. Like, I want to make sure it's worth it. But I still love the art form. You know, you just got to... I don't have time to look in all the nooks and crannies, so I end up reading a lot of stuff I don't love just to get to that point. That's what's hard about being Josh, I guess. What's hard about being Ron and Connor is that they're just on vacation all the time. And oh wait, that's not difficult at all. All right, so before I started this, I wrote on Twitter that I was going to be doing this, so I'm going to answer some questions in rapid-fire succession. Oh, I haven't looked in a while. There's quite a lot. Okay, here we go. Dave Jordan, what gauge guitar strings do you use? That's not good for everybody. 1042. What current industry trends make you most hopeful for the future of the medium and the corollary, which make you least hopeful? I don't think the medium is going anywhere. Most helpful is, again, the focus on talent over and over again. The one thing that the big two have learned is that at the very least, they need people who are compelling. So that makes for good stories. It makes it a little harder to break in, I think. But I just think comic book art right now is as good as it's ever been. If the last big change, Kyle Owens, that was the last one was Josh LaBelle. This one is Kyle Owens. It said the last big change to the industry was digital comics. What's next? Or at least what would be a new change of equal size? Yeah, I don't know if digital comics were that big change. I think they wanted it to be. I don't know that it's changed that much. Honestly, the last big change to the comics industry, to me, I think, was the idea that, and then both big two are doing this, is this just constant rebooting. And I know it's not a reboot, but it's a reboot where they're just like, we're back to number one, we're starting over, everything is working in volumes now. And I don't know that that's great. That's my least favorite. So to combine those two, any artist that has surprised you with a new approach to their art, asks Monica. I don't know off the top of my head. I know this week the art that I noticed. I noticed Mitch, who'd been doing like Mitch Garrett's on Sheriff, and he'd been doing, you know, like action military stuff and Punisher. And this is like he just had to zero in on faces and posture and acting, and that is a brave thing to do. Because those are the kind of pages that like editors and nerds will like, but it's a little hard to hire based on those. I don't know if Patrick Gleason always drew like that, but I really liked his Superman a lot. Jake Oliveira, not so much a question, but more if you read Superman 2, I'd love to hear your thoughts. I talked about that, Jake. I'm done with your question. Go away. Join to follow. I personally like the introduction of old Superman characters. Doomsday and Eradicator, such like, what are your thoughts? I think I've talked about it. My thoughts are that at first I thought, oh, don't do this, but now I'm kind of like, all right, it's good. They're not ever doing it. I don't really know. I didn't read a lot of that stuff, actually. I've read The Death of Superman, but I don't remember, like, the deal with the Eradicator. He looks stupid. I know that. But I'm enjoying the whole thing, so let's see what happens. Jared Gossett, other than Batman, who are the best comic book detectives? Oh, I know this, and it's completely blanking. The question. That's like the big one, isn't it? Ralph Dibny. Is Elongated Man dead? He must be dead. I think he was the other one. You could find anything. And then there's that guy over in the Inhumans now who has the crazy eyes. Peter Wilson. Don't know, man. Make some Jaws references. That's a question. And I would say, like, did I already? Did I make a Jaws? No? A what? There you go. Dino Esquire says, what is the single thing you believe comics to do better than any medium? Oh, I love that. I don't know if this will be the single thing, but this is the answer I'm thinking of now. I think that comics are like this direct channel of like, it's very, it's urgent of art and story and there's not a lot in the middle. To make a movie, you need a lot of people. To make a comic book, you need one person and a storyteller. So the only thing more stripped down than that would be, I guess, a novel would be prose. I love that it's so direct and immediate, and I like art, but sometimes it can leave you with a little, okay, now what? Like, if you go to a museum and you stare at a piece of beautiful art, you look at it, you know, maybe some people will stare at it and think about it forever, you know, like a song or whatever. But you look at that piece of art and you go, okay, I saw it. Now what? So like you can get through an art museum pretty fast. Comic books are art plus story. And nothing else does that. It's really cool. It's great. You can keep looking at it and go back and find new stuff. You can do that with other art, but this, you also get a story. So you feel like you're getting a little movement. Will Senator, says, what about this era of comics do you think will hold up in several years, especially themes, costumes, writing style? What won't? The costumes will not hold up because they're all stupid now. Okay. One of the things that I think we're seeing is that it's a lot of reflection of our world right now, because a lot of comic book creators are also mired in social media like the rest of us. I'm reading all of these on Twitter. And it's in their thoughts, and an artist who's got stuff in their thoughts has to put it on the page. And so what we're going to be able to do when we look back at this era of comics is see people who are trying to make something fun and commercial, but also trying to wrestle through all these things, which is, by the way, the same thing that happened in the 60s and in the 70s. And I don't know so much about the 80s. Jose Eugenio says, you should make the intro and ending song playing your guitar. I am not that good, and I don't want to mic the amp. I don't write music. Michael B. Any good comic recommendations for a new dad? All the father stories in comics I could think of are fairly dark or depressing. My two favorite father stories in comics are Preacher and Starman. Starman is not dark or depressing. It's about repairing a relationship with your father on the way to becoming a father, and it's incredibly uplifting at the end. Preacher is about how important that is. Ethan says, I enjoyed you and Ron and Connor discussing the definitive artist of each decade. Who are the writers of each decade? Stan Lee is the writer of the 60s, or however you want to take that. Later would be Roy Thomas. 70s has got to be... Chris Claremont's more the 80s. I feel like we did this. The 70s. I'm trying to think. Like Steve Englehart or... Marv Wolfman. I'm going to go with Marv Wolfman for the 70s. 80s? The 80s didn't have a writer. No. It's just... The end of it was just artists. Claremont's the 80s. The 90s? It would be... Alan Moore. Probably a little bit in the 80s, but mainstream. I'm gonna make Claremont be the 80s, Alan Moore be the 90s, and the 2000s is Brian Bendis. And this decade, 2010s, I don't know who it is. I don't know that we have a defense. Probably, I guess it's maybe it's Kirkman, but I don't know that he's spread his seed enough. And that other question I'm not doing from that person. Ned M. All is said and done. Wire, West Wing, or Band of Brothers? Okay, this one's easy. The West Wing is my favorite TV show of all time, but I believe The Wire is the best TV show of all time. I like them both, but if I had to pick a favorite, I would go with The West Wing, but I think The Wire is a better piece of work, if that makes sense. Band of Brothers is a miniseries. I don't categorize it as a television series. It's either it's like a novel or one long book, and Band of Brothers is the best thing. Band of Brothers' best thing goes in the Preacher category. Just like that as a whole, thank God that exists. It's great. Adam Dodd, if you could make a new comic franchise universe and draft in 10 characters... I hate those kind of things. I don't have time to do it. I mean, you Batman. Batman and Hawkeye and some people. We'll come back to that. Dan Lighty says, do you got this? Dude. Other than Preacher and Hellblazer, what is your favorite thing Garth Ennis has written? That's a good question. Hitman. I love Hitman. I love Hitman almost as much as I love Preacher. Stuart Condy, has a creator's personality, actions, proclamations ever stopped you from reading their work? JMS. That is not naming names. Oh, I name names. That's one writer I like. I don't like. I don't like anything that he's got going on, so I don't read his work. I don't like his work. Although he's done things that I've liked, and when he did things that I liked, I said so. I don't know him personally, so maybe he's great. What are Neeks 99? What are your favorite underused character in comics? The person you get excited about when seeing when they randomly show up in a book. I don't know. It's almost not like my thing. Like I don't have like an, like if you have an encyclopedic memory or knowledge of these characters, sometimes like I'll see somebody and I'll just be happy that I know who they are. I don't like, I'm like, oh man, I can't wait for Whirlwind to show up or Willow the Wisp. What you just heard was that when I was a kid, the Marvel handbook, the Marvel Universe handbook or whatever it was. I bought like one trade of it, but it was only like the last volume. So it was like T through Z. And I just named like three W's because those were the ones. I read it. I read the whole thing cover to cover, but I never got into the other volumes. I just had like that fifth volume of it. Other than I got this, Dan Emmons. Other than I got this, what are the tropes that you're getting tired of in comics or otherwise? I still see the lady underwear coming up above the waistline of the pants every once in a while. It still drives me nuts. I know there's a better answer, but that's the first thing I thought of. It still happens. Damian Sherman, what does the Justice League movie need to do to make you like it? It needs to be good and interesting. And it needs to make me not roll my eyes. And it's real. That's hard because those characters are very specific in my mind. And then finally, Future Dizzy says, when will you guys talk about Reign of Fire again? I'll talk about it right now. I haven't watched Reign of Fire in a while. I bought a Blu-ray of it for like nothing, like $6 or $8 or something. And I was like, all right, we're going to watch Reign of Fire. And I put it on. I was like, this Blu-ray doesn't look very good. I'm mad. What a fun movie. Let's do the Josh doesn't like fun thing. That's fun. That's just pure fun. It's good. I like fun. Everybody else can go screw. Oh, that is all the questions that I have. I'm going to go back to the script now, and we're going to finish up the business of the show. The Ron and Connor did a Warcraft episode. I haven't listened to it, so I don't think that Mike Romo was on it, but I'm not sure. We all used to play Warcraft, where we learned that we're bad at games, so we only played with each other, because anytime we would play with somebody else, we'd get killed. It was pretty sad, but I still have the sweet mouse that I bought back then when I was playing a lot that was going to make it much easier, because it had other buttons and a laser precision. And then I started to get sort of an RSI kind of thing when I used that mouse, so I switched to the Apple Mighty mouse pad. I don't know what it's called, the little click pad. There might be a Star Trek show. I'm not sure when. There will be a Suicide Squad show. I'm not sure when. And we still have Goodfellas Minute over at goodfellasminute.com. If you haven't listened to that, 146 minutes of us talking about is one episode for every minute of Goodfellas. That was a fun time. Don't hold your breath for another movie. That was really hard. And we can't think of another movie that we want to do, and everybody keeps doing them. And I don't want to do a movie that somebody's already doing. Somebody already did my favorite movie, and apparently they didn't finish. So that's bad. Go to iFanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can talk about this week's book. You can say nice things to me. Don't say mean things to me directly. Say them somewhere else and so that I can't accidentally find them. You can find all of our other podcasts, video shows, that interview that I talked about with Tom King and Mitch Gerrits, which reminds me, I got to talk to the other guy that I'm going to do an interview with. Guy and a person, another person. Two people. I like doing teams. It's fun. I don't have to do all the work. Sometimes they talk to each other and I can just sit back, take a drink, chill out. You know what's up? I gotta talk to that other person. So go over to iFanboy.com. You can follow us at facebook.com/iFanboy or at iFanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, at CS Kilpatrick, and at RonXO. And if you like the show, please leave a review in iTunes. That's there omnipresent also. I've used omnipresent twice in this show. I get stuck on big words and I just like to use them over and over again. Leave a review there. Write something nice. Or not nice, but I will not appreciate it if you don't write something nice. I don't know what the point of that is. But I guess you should, because otherwise it skews the ratings. If only people who like things write a review, then maybe people who don't like reviews. Everything on Amazon has 4 stars. So you know if something has 2 stars, it's really bad, is what I'm getting at. And that's why I can't find an affordable USB to Lightning adapter without buying the Apple one for $32, which seems like a bit much for a 2-inch cable. What was I saying? Tell other people about the podcast. Link it. I'm still seeing, and I really appreciate when folks recommend us to other people looking for good podcasts. And usually that other person's like, yeah, no, I already listened to that, or I listened to it. I don't really like those guys that much. Or it's often Sean Penn from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I find. And he hits his head with a shoe. But thank you for doing that. This we did it. Yay! I think that's an hour. Thanks for listening. Everybody will be back next week. Oh, frig, I forgot to do ratings. Ratings! I read a Rebirth book. I read Justice League Rebirth. Look at that, last minute. Oh, Connor would be so mad at this, but I'm doing it. I read Justice League by Rebirth by Brian Hitch. Written by Brian Hitch with art by Brian Hitch. I thought it was pretty good. Some of his faces weren't great. But it was fun. And I liked all those things in it. It was like a 3.5. And I will probably read the next one. Ratings. Yes! I can't believe I almost screwed that up. But then I didn't. So that was like a nice surprise at the end. Somewhere there's a dude and he's like, they said they were going to do ratings. And they didn't do them. I hate those guys. Well, here's to you, buddy. I'm Josh. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.